This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector. Investigative conversations about issues that impact our lives. Be curious. Friday mornings at 9 a.m. only on 101.9 Chai FM.
And yes, this is The Deep Dive. I'm your host, Brooke Spector, as is the case. And my guest today, Bo Peterson. Now, those of you who are interested in motorsports, you might suddenly go, oh, wait, hey, boy, Bo Peterson, the Danish cyclist. And no, not that Bo Peterson. Bo Peterson, the actor, playwright, who has done a very, very affecting and compelling piece of theater. It's effectively a one-person show, although in the run that she did in Johannesburg, certainly a cousin that she became acquainted with provided the musical continuity that matched the texture of the language very nicely. My wife and I saw it early on in its run in Johannesburg, and it was a topic of conversation for some weeks afterwards, let's put it that way. And many people were told, go see it. And the play is called Pieces of Me. Let me try to describe it if I can. Bo can interrupt me because she has quite a long resume of theater work stretching back many years in South Africa. Early years of, I guess really, just as the Market Theater was beginning and when it was still, the producing part of it was called The Company, which was separate and independent under the late Barney Simon. And she has performed in any number of plays and all kinds of things. And I read somewhere, you almost got arrested because of a part in the play Equus.
Yes. Which
I never thought of as something to generate arrest warrants, but you know, you can tell me that story in a minute. But she's now resident in South Bend, Indiana, after having been brought up in South Africa all her life. South Bend, Indiana. Most South Africans have probably no idea where that is. It's smack in the middle of the country, right in the heartland, if you will. And its most famous product is the University of Notre Dame. I'm going to give you a quiz in a minute, Bo, because if you live in Notre Dame, you have to know these things, I'm sure. Okay. But first, let's welcome you. And I'm really pleased that we could catch you as you have finished up your theatrical run in South Africa this time around, with the understanding that you may well get to come back with it yet again next year, develop it a little differently, perhaps, or add something to it, or tweak it this way or that way, or run it the way it is, because it's perfect. Thank you for joining us.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me as I'm about to get into the plane and go off back to the United States. Yeah.
Are you're leaving shortly?
I'm leaving this evening, but you know, to
avoid shortly
rush hour, I'm going to the airport a little earlier than I should be. Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense. I have to ask, how did you end up in South Bend, Indiana? That's not a magnet for most South Africans, or ex-South Africans, as the case may be.
So it's all to do with my husband, really, because we had to go where my husband could get a job, and he was offered a job at the University of Notre Dame. He is a mediator, and Notre Dame has a very famous peace institute, and so he got offered a job there, and yeah, so that's how we ended up in South Bend. I always swore that I would never go back to a small town. I don't mind a farm, and I don't mind, and I love cities, but kind of small towns, growing up in small towns most of my life, they don't do it for me. However, here I am in South Bend, which reminds me very much of the town that I grew up, Carltonville. It's very flat, lots of mealies, or corn, as they say in America, and relatively conservative, not completely, but relatively conservative.
And smack in the middle of that town is a rather large university, which is best known by most Americans for a couple of things.
Football.
There you go. The name Knute Rockne, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it amazes me, you know.
It's American football, by the way.
Yes, America. And wherever you go in America, you know, as soon as you say Notre Dame, everyone kind of gets very excited. I have managed to watch one football match against Michigan State, which apparently is the big rival. And the year I watched, Notre Dame won. So that was very exciting. It was a real cultural experience for me. I was lucky. I was sitting with Americans and they were explaining to me all the things, you know, the songs that happen at certain times, and it was exciting.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's very different than South African football, but in a way, it also is very tribal. If you go to Notre Dame and you get caught up in the football frenzy, which I guess it's almost required as part of graduation that you have to be, no matter where you go thereafter, you remain part of that community.
Absolutely.
And it's always on television during the season when football games are broadcast, and it often, not always, but often is one of the top teams in the country at the university level.
It's had a really good season this last year.
Pride there. That's good. That's good.
Yeah. So, and the interesting thing, you know, the little town is the population is 100,000, and during when there's a home match, that population basically doubles. I mean, 80 over 80,000 people come into the town, and that for me was just amazing because I mean, it's as you say, I mean, it's not inaccessible, the little town, because we're near Chicago and we're relatively near New York, but there are very few direct flights. So, you know, people have to make an effort to get there. But yeah, over football day, that town is just pumping. It's just doubled its size overnight.
And there are all these trucks, bakkies, for those of you who are South Africans. People put the flap down and they have barbecues, fries, and everybody gathers around it. And they're all sort of half socked by the time the game starts, which I guess lends a certain quality to the cheering.
Yes, and it's a big thing there, what they call it tailgating. And I went to actually have a look to see what it was like. And as you say, it was just people having braais and having a few beers and having a good time before the match.
Then stumbling into the match and cheering wildly when your team is winning, and being sullen or booing when your team has fumbled the ball or the other team has scored or whatever it might be. But
Yeah.
let's talk about pieces of. Now you passed the one test. You knew who Knute Rockne was,
I did know who Rodney was. Rockne.
and Father Hesberg.
Oh yes. Father Hesberg is a big, he comes out at every opportunity. photographs of him and of course Martin Luther King, who he marched with and sang with. And he was, I, you know, unfortunately he had already passed on by the time we got there, but everyone, you know. I think he has, I mean, obviously not as great a stature as Mandela, but there's definitely that kind of feeling. People always talk about him with a lot of reverence. He sounds like he, you know, was a real, not sort of holier than thou, but a very active person and a personable person as well. Yeah.
I never met him, obviously. It would never have been the set of circumstances, but from what I have read by him or of him or watched his activities over the years, he had a significant personal presence, but also an enormous sense of personal commitment
Yeah.
to the causes, civil rights, human rights,
Yeah.
that he was involved with while also running a university.
I think it's moved slightly away from that. Yeah, but definitely he has a fantastic reputation.
But you've passed the Notre Dame test.
Oh, goody.
But now, this play Pieces of Me, it's, as I said, one, it's basically a one person but multi-character effort, not long, about an hour and a few minutes. And the hinge of the play is you unraveling the not easily unravelable past of your father.
Yes, and my relationship with my father, yeah.
And we're going to take a very quick ad break, and we'll be right back after these messages. This is The Deep Dive. I'm your host, Brooke Spector, and my guest today, Bo Peterson. We'll be right back after these messages.
This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
This is The Deep Dive. I'm Brooke Spector, and I'm your host. And my guest today, I'm really pleased, Bo Peterson, actress, playwright. And I would argue, picking at the scab of South Africa's awkwardness in coping with the layers of racial, ethnic heritage that are the truth for many more families than people like to admit easily. Is that fair to say?
Yes, yes. And hopefully it's starting to feel easier, but it's still, you know, these secrets, there's a conspiracy of silence. And I think particularly in the colored community, because I know that the consequences of these secrets being outed had dire consequences. But you know, once one keeps that sort of deep secret to yourself, it's quite difficult to unburden oneself. And I mean, partly that's what I hope my play does, is give people a space to feel that they can start to share and not feel afraid or shamed.
Now, the play is you basically through various stages in your own life, you're discovering more and more as you peel back the onion layers of your father's circumstances and his relatives and the connections to people who have passed as white and others who clearly have not, and your father's very careful progress through the quote-unquote white world as you begin to unravel this heritage question and ancestrage and all the rest of it. And I was thinking about this before our conversation, and I realized that it's not a uniquely South African issue, of course. I was trying to create a roster of American plays and movies and novels that deal with very much the same thing. Came up with a very interesting list very quickly. The Human Stain, both as the book and the movie.
Philip Roth. Yes. Yeah.
The film Pinky, which goes back to the film Showboat, in which one of the lead characters has successfully, up until a moment, hidden her ethnicity. And that's, of course, a play and a film. And there are others as well. Your work explores something of the same territory. And you're doing it all by yourself, but taking on the guise of different characters. An older woman, yourself as a child, your father, and
my grandmother.
Sorry, I've left that part out. That's right. The woman with the duke. Yeah.
Well, that was my aunt. The woman with the duke is my aunt, but the church woman is my grandmother. Okay. And then there's another aunt who moved to Australia. And there's, of course, the headmaster, S.V. Peterson, who was the headmaster who basically gave me the key, I suppose, as I say in the play, who really told me about my father.
Why did you do this? I mean, you've done all kinds of other things on film and stage. Why this? Why this? Why this truth-telling or confessional kind of work? What was the impetus for this?
You know, it's very well. I mean, first of all, I've always been interested in theatre, and that I got from Barney. You know, first of all, telling our stories, South African stories, of what we've got, such an incredible wealth. So that was one, and that I've always believed in theatre as an instrument of healing. And I do believe that this country has really been ravaged for many, many, many years, starting when in 1652, when the colonialists started to come here. And so, and you know, it's an interesting story because I'm not exactly sure why. I mean, I do think it's also because I'm now in the last third of my life. And I think that in a way, and I think, you know, one starts to, I don't know, maybe reflect a lot more. But I didn't actually intend to write this play. And it does sound a little bit kind of esoteric when I say, I think my ancestors kind of said to me, the story needs to be told and it needs to be told now. And everything really has supported that decision. I didn't sit down to think, okay, now I'm going to write a play. My granny came to me in like 2015, my auntie in 2017, my other aunt who lives in Australia, that is actually a letter. It's the real verbatim, a letter that she wrote to me. And then the whole concept, you know, that I play with me being an actor and then suddenly understanding that I had this consummate actor who was my father. And so that relationship, you know, why? Because people have always asked me, why did I want to be an actor? And I could never tell them. I never knew why. I just knew I needed to be an actor, which is different to I want to be an actor. And that working as an actor, I just always felt protected. I felt safe. I felt stimulated. But I realize now, in a way, because from the age of 19, when I knew about my father, I was his custodian in a way, his custodian of his secret. I could never really be me, but in the acting world, you know, you're encouraged really not to be you, but to be a whole lot of other characters. So, and so I really don't know why, but I really feel I've just performed the play with my cousin in Riversdale, which is in the Western Cape, and which is where my father and his family come from. And it was extraordinary. It was truly an extraordinary experience. We performed in the church in which my grandfather was a church warden. And it felt very much like I related to African-American churches, where that sort of response and, you know, when the preacher, I don't know what you call it.
Call and response.
It really felt like that. As I was speaking these stories, you could just hear there was just this wonderful murmur that was really holding me and my cousin. So, long answer.
No. I mean, the production that we saw in Johannesburg, most of the evening, well, maybe not every single one of them, but many of the evenings had a discussion afterwards.
Yes.
With not an instructor, but a facilitator, guider, a prober, protector, person, and my wife included, who did one of those nights. And at least in the one that we went to, nobody left. Everybody stayed on for the discussion. You know, they weren't sitting back. They were leaning forward, trying to figure out, you know, whether they would stand up and offer their own confessional or whether they would sit back and listen to other people's confessions on this score. And you got a mixture of both, obviously. Have you had that response generally in doing this production?
Absolutely. And, you know, it's often theatre managers aren't, when I brought it up, people always go, oh, well, you know, people, it's not really popular. You'll probably get about like 5 people who will stay. Well, every time, and in fact, we've had to call the end of to the discussion because it could go on for hours and hours. And so I've almost seen it as like act 2 of my play. And it really has been profound and moving, and not only in South Africa, you know, because I've done my play in the United States, I've done it in Sweden, and I've done it in Norway. And the same thing, the talkbacks are just fascinating and people want more. And as you say, there is a sense of people leaning forward. And people have told us the most moving, painful, beautiful stories.
Yeah, you've broken the ice so people could say, hey, wait a minute. Now, in my family, the following issue, we're going to take a station break. We're speaking with Bo Peterson, actor, playwright, interpreter of the past, finishing up her time this time around in South Africa with her play Pieces of Me. We'll be right back after these messages.
This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
This is The Deep Dive. I'm Brooke Spector, your host. Bo Peterson is my guest today, the author and the actor who plays all the parts in her work, Pieces of Me, which has now finished up its run in South Africa very successfully and intriguingly to audiences that have seen it. And she says she is thinking about the possibility of maybe coming back next year if sponsorship and such things can be arranged. Anybody with spare money, you know, here you go. Here's a chance. Become an impresario. And we were talking about the confessional nature of the way that your play, how it provokes other people to make their own confessions. What's the most extraordinary thing somebody has said to you after the play was over and they finally sort of, wound up their courage and put it on that sticking post about their own circumstances?
You know, there've been really, a variety, but the one that does stick out in my mind was, in fact, in the United States, where an 83-year-old man said he said to the audience, "I need to say this publicly because I've not said it since I was 6 years old." And he said, "I'm Jewish." But then he went on to tell this whole story of how that had been seen as not something that he should be from the age of six. And he's now a man of 83. And he said, "You know, I want to claim this because this is a part," and it was quite extraordinary. Yeah, you know, but from one guy who was from Venda, his last name in Venda means green, and, you know, and also different permutations. So what happened with an uncle of his who was quite fair-skinned had left his African name and taken on the name Mr. Green and then disappeared from the family. And only many, many years later, someone bumped into him, but he just ducked and dived and so then lived his life without his family and as a Mr. Green. So, you know, stories of loss, because I think that is, for me, especially now being, well, you know, working with my cousin, who was classified as colored and lived his life. He's 3 years older than me. You know, when we talk about my father did this really partly one because he was in love with my mother, but also, you know,
that probably helped.
Yeah, thank goodness. I mean, they were passionately in love for 62 years. But, you know, because he was giving us really a life of privilege, and in a way my cousin didn't have that, the obvious sort of privileges. But what my cousin had, which we didn't have, was this incredible sense of family. And they had these wonderful holidays where they all went out. You know, and I used to dream about having cousins. And my mother always loved a big family. And here we had this family, but that, you know, we weren't party to or part of. So in a way, the wealth that my cousin has is this wealth of belonging and family. And our life was really one of privilege, but a very isolated, lonely life, really.
You have, in the last number of years since you took on this task of creating I don't want to use the word narrative, this exploration, you've united with some, perhaps not all, of your relatives in the other quadrant.
So, I mean, look, I've known my other family from the other side of the fence, as I say, so to speak, since I was 30. So I am now 70. So, you know, for the past 40 years, I have been, is that right? My arithmetic's terrible. Yeah, so I have been in touch with them, but other cousins have suddenly presented themselves from both sides that that both Chris and I had no idea existed. So our family definitely has grown. I mean, there are members of my family who are not at all keen or want to be part of this. That's their prerogative. I don't speak on their behalf. But I think we both feel so privileged, my cousin and I.
Do you feel, when that happens, do you feel like, I wish I had the 30 years that I didn't have with these folks? Or do you say, at last, we've made the connection?
It's both. I often feel very sad for all of us, because I think we lost out on something. And now, yes, it's fantastic that we can make up. But, but we've missed out. And once you've missed out, you missed out. So it's a mixture. I think I vacillate from this, as I was saying to my husband, in fact, being in Riversdale, I really, for the first time in my whole life, did I feel like I'd come home. There was a real sense of homecoming. And then also deep, deep sadness that this is the community from which my father came, but it's not the father I knew, made no reference to that or could share that with us. And it must have been agonizing for him.
He made a choice, as you say, partly for love and partly for the recognition that in the South Africa of then, hopefully better for his immediate family, children, and so forth. Wonders what would have happened if one of his children had turned up suspiciously with more melanin in their skin?
Well, you know, some of them did, but it's the interesting thing about this country then. If you were operating within the white milieu, then people, you know, I mean, I went to school with quite a lot of children who, you know, one could say, and people would say things to them. I as a little girl, and I'm not particularly dark at all, people would say, oh, I think it was mainly because of my hair. You know, they would say the words, you know, oh, have you got a touch of the tar brush? Yeah. So, I mean, that's also why my father wouldn't look at us when we were little, because I think he was scared of that.
Well, I mean, genetics is information. And as we all know now, many people have heritages that are interestingly more complicated than might have appeared on the identity book.
Exactly. And also, you know, even appearances belie a lot of things. I mean, the outside is, I mean, one's DNA. I met someone the other day who, blonde haired, blue eyed, and his ancestry is firmly, in fact, he sits on the same tree, the place on the tree, the sort of human tree, as Madiba. You know, and he said, you look at him and he's this, yeah, you'd say, oh, German or thing, and he's got none of that.
So when we met after the night we saw your production, we talked about your interest that had been sparked in a group called the Mulungan in America. And for those listeners who don't know what that is, that is a group of people in sort of the central southeastern part of the United States whose heritage, whose ancestrage, whose genetic composition is white. It's escaped African slaves. It's Native Americans. In a very complicated, complex jumble. They're not one of the recognized Native American tribes certified by the Department of the Interior, but they have been around since the 1700s as a distinct group. But I looked up the Mulungan and I had forgotten about other groups, the Lumbe, for example, in New Jersey of all places, which you don't necessarily think of as having that component of history in it. Same process, people who were indentured servants or slaves ran away, found safety with Native American tribes, perhaps whites on the run for one thing and another, and over the centuries created an ethnicity that is different than any of the other groups. What sparks your interest in the Mulungan and the others? Because I mean, I sense an interest that's more than just curiosity.
Well, you know, I came across them really purely by accident, but also because I'd read Demon Copperhead, in which the author mentioned them, and it sort of stuck in my head. Well, because I think our DNA is in fact very similar. Mm. And, you know, I think sort of African American community and Native American community, obviously also they're similar, if people, and a lot of people have mixed, as I love what your wife called it, mixed range. It's become my favorite I think I'm going to just keep it as an explanation, because people always ask me now about my identity, and I'm going to say it's mixed range. Yeah, so it just felt like, you know, because in the United States, to explain our particular history and in terms of coloreds, it as a very distinct group, it was quite complicated. And so when I found this group, I just thought, oh my goodness, I'm a South African. So you say Malungan, because I said Malungan, but must be Malungan.
I've never heard it. I've only read it.
Okay. I mean, I said to the, because I've been speaking to the chairperson of their, they have an association. And in fact, I'm going the end of June, I'm going to be performing for them at their annual conference. And I asked her, you know, how do you identify? And she said, we identify as people whose ancestry is that, rather than using that actual word. So, I mean, I'm absolutely fascinated to see what it'll be like. And yes.
We're going to have to take another short break and
yes.
complete a message. This is The Deep Dive. I'm your host, Brooke Spector, and we're speaking to Bo Peterson. At the end of her tour in South Africa this time around. She's from here, obviously. Pieces of Me, fascinating play. I hope it comes back next year and more people, even than who saw it already, get to see it. We'll be right back after these messages.
This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
This is The Deep Dive. I'm Brooke Spector, your host, and my guest today, Bo Peterson. Bo is an actor, is a playwright. She lives in South Bend, Indiana, but she is from South Africa. She is of South Africa. Her family, ultimately, the origins are in Riversdale, which is about as South African as you can get, I guess. And she was here performing her work, solo work, and she plays a whole half dozen characters, really, Pieces of Me. And the title should tell you a lot about what it is. It's if you were a psychoanalyst, I guess you might say that she is reintegrating all the different elements of her past, her life, her origins, her family, the unanswered questions that couldn't really be asked, and somehow weaving them into this texture, which then becomes an enthralling piece of theater that provokes audience members to say, wait a minute, my story is like this. And I saw that happen, the performance that I went to. Now, we were talking about the American groups that don't fit the stereotypical vision of American society. There are white people, there are African Americans, there are Native Americans, Latinos maybe. But then the realization that Bo had that there were groups in the country that were made up of all kinds of mixtures of such people from out of the past of the country before this process of racial separation and specific identity was precise and legally defined. And you're going to go to this group in, I guess it's Tennessee, am I right?
It is Johnson City, yeah, Tennessee.
I have no idea where that is.
It's apparently close to North Carolina.
Okay,
I've never been to Tennessee, so that's exciting for me. Yeah,
because that would be up in the Appalachian Mountains or the foothills.
Yes,
would be the places, the kind of place where people like that would have gone and created a society. And I actually went back and checked afterwards, after we talked about this, there were dozens of small groups of people scattered all through the Southeast and even up through to New England that have this anomalous identity.
Yes.
They know who they are, but the rest of the country is not entirely clear what that means.
Yeah.
And
I'll be fascinated to see it, because I'm going to learn a whole lot, and that's for me very exciting as well, obviously.
So this, you're going to perform the play as it is written now. Are you going to have a facilitator afterwards to draw out the audience of those people?
Yeah, I mean, well, first of all, the night before, my sister, she may be, but she might, in terms, there might be a clash. She was going because my sister is a was used to be a history teacher, so she's going to do kind of a historical lecture because this is their annual conference on the Friday night to give them a kind of a context, and then I'm going to do the play the next day, and that. My sister or myself would do the facilitated talk back. Unfortunately, my cousin can't be with me, but I do have his music with me, so someone will technically will weave it through. The thing with my cousin, of course, is that visually also it's very interesting because my cousin looks very similar to me. Skin tone is very similar to mine, and having that combination and seeing the genetic similarity because we are family, because when I first asked him, which was last year when I came to the Baxter, I knew I wanted a live musician and I hadn't actually even thought about him. And then as I was speaking to him, because he knows a lot of musicians, I suddenly thought, no, of course, he is the person who must be doing this. And initially he was like, no, you're crazy. I can't do this. I'm not a professional musician, although he teaches music all the time. But then I said to him, this is your story. You and I are pieces of each other. And so he took that on, and it's been fantastic, I think. I mean, I know for him that he suddenly discovered a whole lot of stuff that he had not really spoken about before or acknowledged before. And so it's been really wonderful being with him. And in Johannesburg, of course, because we were on tour, so we shared the same digs and we did the things that cousins are meant to do, So.
Do you have plans, or have you already perhaps recorded this on video for the edification, the astonishment, the education of audiences that can't see it live?
Well, what's very exciting is that two possibilities, which are still kind of being spoken about. One is a documentary, but I think that would be more about the whole process and my cousin and me. And then the possibility of a movie or maybe a series. So all of this is in the mix. I have, and then there's also a possibility of actually having it done sort of professionally, a real recording of the play, because I do have a recording of it, but it was done by a friend of mine with, during a performance, with one camera. But there's also the chance of going into a professional studio and having it done like that.
I mean, a work like that, because there aren't lots of characters moving around on the stage, although obviously you transform yourself, with a hat or a coat or a suitcase or a different pair of shoes. And you do it nicely, so we don't get confused between who is this person now? Who are we listening to right now? In some ways, it's a lot easier to do to do a recording of that, because if you had, say, two cameras close up and far, you capture everything.
So it'll be interesting, and I'm also interested. I'm fascinated with the people who are keen in doing it in a movie, because obviously, if they did it a movie, then I wouldn't be playing all the characters. I mean, I don't even know if I would necessarily be in. I suppose I might, So for me, that's another whole new thing of them taking my script and turning it into a film script, and how, what would that look like? So that's exciting.
Then there'd be recriminations of, "That's not me. That's not what I meant."
Well, I would be very involved in the whole process. I'm not going to let it leave my hands. But I mean, I feel like I've got another. This play is emotionally very demanding, and so I feel I've got like one more year. And what I would really love to do is do it for schools. I mean, I performed at a school in Riversdale for grade 10 and 11, and they were just fantastic. And a lot of the kids' first language is not English, is Afrikaans, and it was amazing. So I really feel, and I'm really hoping, and I hope if anyone's listening, because I've got a wonderful producer here, Asatej, run by The director is Yvette Hardy. And, you know, if we could get a schools tour together, but we would need funding for that. It would be my gift to South Africa. but I think it would be fantastic if that could happen.
All right, come on, folks. I mean, you know, ante up on this one. It gets my seal of approval. You should do it. It's not going to cost that much because you only need one. You only have one person traveling, and a director maybe shows up every once in a while.
It would be nice if my cousin were there. So it would be
two people and a set that fits in a suitcase.
Exactly.
It doesn't. You know, it's a chair. Well, everybody has a chair somewhere, I guess.
Exactly.
And you know, there's some props, and that's it. And it's a doable. There's a project for somebody. We're going to take one more quick ad break. This is The Deep Dive. I'm Brooke Spector, and hosting Bo Peterson today, actor, playwright, investigator of the anthropological and archaeological past of her own life, as well as that of, I guess, most South Africans in one way or another. As we used to say in radio 50 years ago, don't touch that tile. We'll be right back after these messages.
This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
And this is The Deep Dive, back for our last portion of our program today. I'm Brooke Spector, your host, and my guest is Bo Peterson. She's about ready to get on an airplane and fly back to the United States, to South Bend, Indiana, where soon enough she'll be able to cheer for old Notre Dame, where she lives and her husband teaches and works. And she did pass the test about famous Notre Dame people, so I guess we're safe. She understands where she is. But we're talking really about the play that she did, Pieces of Me, and the larger context of this. When did you feel that this work was finished? When did you feel that you had captured what you meant to say? You felt it was making the points you needed to make, the history you needed to describe, and the characters you needed to wheel out in front of an audience. How did you feel when you reached that point? Was there a eureka moment, or was there just, now I put down my pen?
You know, I think it's always ongoing, actually, quite frankly. I mean, I do feel I've got the body, but then the hairstyle can be tweaked a little bit. And so even since you saw it, which is right in the beginning of the run in Joburg, some of the historical facts haven't changed, but they've been tweaked and maybe corrected. So, you know, but I do feel the body is absolutely there. And then maybe there are like shades of something else that might come in. I mean, something that people, when we performed in Riversdale, there's this incredible woman who used to be my grandmother's neighbor as a young woman. And she's now 103, completely compos mentis. She came to see the play and we spoke to her. And when I saw her after the play, she said to me, she so wished I'd had photographs of my parents so people could see them. And that is something that a lot of people have said to me, you know, it'd be really nice to have slides. So, but it's two things, you see, because one of my missions in this is that I wanted it completely transportable. As you say, everything fits into my suitcase, which I actually then put into a backpack so I can put it onto my back. Everyone, so in terms of props, everyone, we need three chairs and a table. We can find that anywhere. When you start getting more technical, I mean, even like with my cousin, you know, he's got to then carry his big keyboard. We've got to have amps. We've got to have a proper sound system. And then if we're going to put on top of that slides, you then need someone to operate the slides at the right time. So then it becomes a different kind of production. I'm not close to that, though, at all. But I think, so it's almost like I've got two versions. I've got like a touring version, which would really be me and hope, and at times my cousin. But like I'm going to be performing at a fringe festival in Iceland the beginning of June. But I'm going on my own with my South African producer who will be my technical person because my cousin can't come with us. As I say, I think the body is there. That's not going to change, but there might be little corrections here and there.
I would suspect that no matter what country you go to with this, what location you go to, there is a, I don't want to use the word hidden, but there is an obscured history, social history, that speaks to a group, a tribe, a clan, a collection of people who somehow fit into this story in some oblique way. And that you'll find there's a resonance. And I'm going to, unfortunately, we're going to run out of time, and I'd love to talk to you longer. You have to catch a plane anyway. If you have a last comment, like a minute or so of something that we didn't talk about that you feel you really must say, please, this is it. This is the last moment.
Well, it segues beautifully in what you've just saying, and my cousin always brings it up, you know, that, yes, I suppose the bottom line is that it deals with identity, but identity is not only about color of skin. It could be gender, it could be religion, and then ultimately about family secrets and how all families have secrets and somehow, you know, and hopefully this is an opportunity where people can feel that they can start to look at it. They don't have to tell everyone, but they can start to look at it and own it and understand that these secrets often, even if they've been shrouded in shame, are actually often an incredible richness. It makes it, and that's what I would like people to do, is to try and move away from the shame of the secret, because someone has said to them, that's not good enough, or that's the wrong thing. And yeah.
Don't talk to them. They're the other people.
Yeah, exactly.
We have to wind this one up and make way for the next program. But it's been a delight to speak with Bo Peterson, South African by birth, actor, many different plays. We didn't get a chance to talk about how you almost got arrested for the play Equus, which
I got arrested. The Immorality Act as well, because they thought I was they said it was a section that dealt with prostitutes because I took my top off on stage.
So there you are. So you were criminal too.
it got thrown out, thank goodness. Okay.
That's good to hear. Otherwise, yeah. you know, there would be untold troubles in your life. Anyway. Yes. Bo, it's been a delight to speak with you, and I wish you well. Enjoy your efforts in various communities in the U.S., and I hope to see you next year when you come this way.
Absolutely.
And I would look forward to seeing how the play evolves into something the same but slightly different. This is Brooke Spector, your host of The Deep, and we've been speaking with Bo Peterson. Her play, Pieces of Me. We'll be back again next week. This week we did the arts. Next week, who knows, maybe we'll do international economics or perhaps space travel. I haven't quite decided what the theme is next week. We like to keep you guessing. And if you like this program and you want others to hear it, it's repeated on Sunday at, goodness sake, it's repeated at 10 o'clock in the morning. You can listen to it again. And that's it from us this week. This is The Deep Dive. Have a good weekend.